Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we're here with brand new Star Trek content.
Thanks to our last Star Trek episode with our friends that we do Trek trivia with.
Yeah, Rabindra broke the tie.
Yes. So we are working on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, which is your favorite TV series of Star Trek.
It is. I just love all the character development that they give everyone. And the running gags. Like, those two things will make any show for me.
Mm. So, what have we been up to outside of things? So, like...
Plants and rabbits.
Yes. We did so much work yesterday. In, like, 2 hours, it was so gross and hot.
It was.
We laid down cardboard and then mulch over, like, the rest of one half of the garden.
Right. So, it's, like, maybe 45%.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yes, because there are some parts that won't get it, like where the asparagus is and things like that. So,
oh, and we have new asparagus up around the parsley bed.
Yes. So I'd say we're 50% of the area that will be covered.
Yeah. There's a big spot up at the front by the rhubarb.
Yeah.
But with a few of the hay blocks.
Yeah. I mean,
that'll work.
Yep.
And oh, there's a bee's nest we have to deal with at some point, too.
Oh, yeah.
But we planted some yellow pimpernel, which I've been unable to grow from seed, so I just ordered plants because there was a sale. And royal catchfly, which is kind of sort of, but not really carnivorous.
Hmm.
Like, it's not like a Venus flytrap where it's like the soil is so poor that it needs the nutrition from insects.
Mm-hmm.
It has sticky stuff on its stem and little hairs.
Interesting.
So bugs will get stuck.
Oh.
And then digestive fluids will break the bugs down as more of a hygiene thing rather than a
nutritional
thing.
Wow.
But it's good for hummingbirds. It's got red flowers in that shape that you see in all the hummingbird feeders.
Okay.
And I saw a hummingbird yesterday at the purple foxglove.
Oh.
So there's one in the neighborhood.
Yes. That's not liking whatever food is out there.
No.
Like, the mix is just not right for them.
No. But, oh, and we'll have to start dropping some bunny beans into the soil by the cardinal flower so that we can reseed it and it'll have good soil.
Yeah.
In the fall. And hopefully it'll actually come up.
Yes. Luckily, we have plenty of bunny beans.
We know the sources.
Yes. What have you been reading comic-wise?
Just finished the Marvel Max Rawhide Kid.
Which was part of the Max line, which is like its explicit line.
Parental advisory. But
the only explicit content is that he's gay. Like, that's it. He doesn't even have a gay kiss.
No, he is not sexual at all. He makes some innuendos. Like, he has a date set up with the Cartwrights in Nevada. Yes. But that is close as it gets. It's just a lot of like glib comments.
Yeah. So I don't know why they slotted it. Maybe we'll discuss that in our upcoming miniseries stuff, because it is a miniseries.
When did it come out? In the aughts?
Yeah.
And maybe
it had that
was enough explicitness.
It was that movie, Bulletproof?
Bulletproof Monk?
Yeah. Those ads were in it.
Oh, that is early aughts.
That's, yeah, Sean William Scott.
I think.
Yeah.
I saw that with a friend in high school.
Sean William Scott, noted Minnesotan.
Oh, that's nice.
And hunky. Like, he had a moment in the early 2000s.
I feel like this was his attempt to not be the goofy...
Yeah. Stifler.
Yeah. Which I've never seen those movies, and I don't really intend to.
Yeah.
It's not my jam.
Yeah.
But what is our jam is Star Trek.
So this is written by Howard Weinstein, these two issues.
Yes.
And I pulled up a little bio on him. You want to hear a little bit more about Howard?
Yeah.
So he's big in Star Trek, like loves Star Trek as a fan. And he became the youngest person ever to write a script for Star Trek at age 19.
Wow.
In 1974. Selling the script for the Pirates of Orion for the animated series.
You know, we need to actually watch the animated series rather than just have it on in the background.
He has written numerous Star Trek novels, which, you know, my jam.
It's true.
He was also credited with a thanks on Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, like in the credits. So he wrote several issues for Deep Space Nine and also for Voyager for Marvel.
Did he do any other TV episodes?
Not that I could see.
He has a corgi.
He does. So he prefers Deep Space Nine. And he once commented that the series was, quote, the most interesting Star Trek format that they've come up with yet. You have the space station, which isn't going anywhere, which actually we're going to get into that in this episode. And they're involved with the Cardassians, Bajorans, Klingons, and whoever else might come to the station. They're also involved with the wormhole and what goes on in the Gamma Quadrant. You've got the Jem'Hadar and the Founders to worry about. There's all that, but at the same time, you have the Defiant, and as the TV show has demonstrated, the Defiant can go off and do the classic Star Trek exploration ship shows that the original series and the Next Generation did every week. Plus, you've got all the interaction with Starfleet and what's going on back on Earth. So he loves Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
And
because those are some of the selling points. I know people were like, oh, it's a station, you can't really explore.
Yeah,
but you explore cultural and spiritual things and people who come to you.
Yes.
Like, they went without the Defiant for 2 seasons. I think it shows up in season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So
it also notes that he is noted for his dedication to fans appearing at hundreds of conventions. He lives in Maryland with his dog Shelby.
Oh, I wonder if he goes to Farpoint Con, where
we should ask the show,
Demanda Martini does a lot of work for.
Yeah. So the novels he wrote, some TNG, some original series, and Tales of the Dominion War. It seems like not a huge output, but probably really meaningful because he's so connected to the universe.
Yeah,
in which it exists.
And based on that quotation you read, I could see the Tales of the Dominion War being really good.
Yeah. So, well, I might have that series from
local comic book college.
Yeah, I need like a dedicated shelf, I feel, for Star Trek novels at this point.
Yeah.
To put somewhere.
Yes.
I have to clean that library. Wow. It's like a running gag at this point.
It's in the library somewhere.
Yeah. All right. So you have issue 1 of Deep Space Nine. I have issue 2. Yeah. Why don't you kick us off?
Well, we should also give a shout out to Matt Webb for colors, Tom Grinberg for penciling, and graphic color Seps. Don't know what that is, but the art.
Those are separations.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I also have L. Milgram as the inker on my issue.
Oh, fun.
Which.
Oh, yes. He's in this.
L. Milgram putting in work for decades at Marvel.
Oh. Was he one of the ones that we met at C2E2?
No.
Oh. Okay. So, disclaimer up front, all the Star Trek comic books have great art, especially in the first few pages.
Mm.
So I don't feel like Bajor is actually supposed to be this close, but you've got this great view of the space station with Bajor behind with some green and blues. And the amount of detail on DS9 in this picture is impressive, immaculate, some other word that starts with M or IM. But it's amazing. Like, it's even got the little...
Is yellow... it amazing?
Yes. Well, it's consonants. It's the M sound. It's got those little yellow triangle bits that are sort of iconically Cardassian, even on the docking ring. Like, all the pylons are there. All the, like, short stubby things up off the habitat ring are there. And it's just beautiful. So we get a shot. Kira is on the station. She is awaiting a status report from Defiant, responding to the medical emergency at the Federation Observatory, studying an unstable protostar in the Satoki Nebula. Also, why would you put an observatory close to an unstable protostar? You know there's some shenanigans that's going to happen there.
Yeah.
And we actually get a picture of it. It took me a sec to figure out that it's the Defiant from the side view.
Oh.
Very flat. But the
it is like a little disc.
Yeah. And the observatory is there, and it's got that hexagon structure. So if anyone was playing Birth of the Federation like I was all the time, it looks like the isolinear array. It's like +6 scanning range. Took a lot of energy.
I still have a tab open in one of my several windows on this computer.
Oh, for how to make that happen?
Yes, how to make Birth of the Federation happen for you.
I mean, Crusader Kings is sort of filling that void of like immense micromanagement that I find so satisfying.
But you could do it on your lap.
It's true.
While also having something on the TV.
Oh, I could not do that. Not for the amount of attention that either of those games required.
Mm.
But it's got the little hexagon structure, and then like little hexagons are missing, and it's very space station-y. So everyone in the observatory survived. They had a shield failure, so there was radiation poisoning that affected them. So the doctor's there. He is stabilizing them, but they will need more intensive medical facilities. And Dax is like, well, Benjamin, tell Jillian I'll make sure the infirmary's ready. I also love that she can get away with calling people by their first names. And that
because she's so old.
Yes. She old.
Yes.
But she also has that like cool aloofness that Terry Farrell did really well in the show. And I feel like that carries over really well into the comics.
So to talk about the art that you've just referenced, Tom Grinberg.
Yes. I mean, Dax's updo bun thing looks very large, and she's got like a widow's peak thing going on, which at first I was like, that's not Terry Farrell's face.
Oh,
I don't know if that should be an episode title or not. But then I was like, you know what? It's okay. She's a Trill. She's an alien. She doesn't have to look so incredibly humanoid.
So Tom Grinberg is the penciler on most of this series for Deep Space Nine. Ooh, I think the only two that he isn't are the crossover issues for Telepathy War. So because...
we still need to do that.
We will. After we read all the series it appears in. I think there are only 12 issues in this run. And yeah, you just went silent because you're staring out the window at something.
Because I'm old and there's a bird, but I think it's just Mr. Cardinal. I would love to think that it was a Scarlet Tanager since we know that they're in the area. And that little bird. Oh, no, it's definitely a cardinal.
So I lied.
It had that punk look to it.
This actually goes to 15 issues.
Oh.
Two of them are still Telepathy War, but it's after he gets done.
Oh, okay.
Or part of the way. Never mind. Scratch what I said about Telepathy War. He does one of the two crossover issues for Telepathy War. He's here for the majority. He is here for issues 1 through 9 and 12 out of 15.
Too long, didn't read. He does a lot of it.
He does. So the art that you're loving here.
Yeah, the facial expressions are good, Kira, in the display screen. And then we get 5 ships coming out of the wormhole. There are 2 Jem'Hadar, and I believe there's 3 Amarlin seats.
Yes.
There are 3 Amarlin seats. And the ships look super cool. There's like little wing thingies on the sides. The cockpits are fairly evident. The Jem'Hadar ships are good. But there's also this ridiculous energy coming through. Like the neutrino energies are super high. And it's going to fry everything. There's a lot of push, 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 push. And Kira's not taking this lying down. Like, I just love how in command she is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, through the dialogue, through the art, like, you're in good hands with Kira Nerys.
This 2-issue arc is called Judgment Day.
It is. And the title page, again, beautiful, beautiful art. The intense detail on a lower pylon and like looking at the lower bits of the main core and the habitat ring.
And Al Milgram is the inker, earning holy his keep.
Holy buckets.
So much black ink, like, but with fine detail for like windows.
Yeah, all the yellow windows are there, and all the stars and the stellar background stuff
yeah
looks so good. And especially, I hope he started with a black background almost.
Yeah.
And added the white. But the wormhole is in these cool blues, and then the pink energy that's coming out of the wormhole. It's so good.
Matt Webb, we see you.
Yes.
And your coloring.
Oh, amazing. So whatever it is, it has locked the wormhole open. And Sisko is like, are you in any danger? And Kira's like, not yet, Captain. But these ships are firing at each other with the energy coming out. The way the page is organized has their dialogue across the top, and then four rays sort of angled coming up from the bottom going across. So the one of the Amaranth Seat ships gets destroyed.
The Wheel of Time references are just ripe in this episode.
You haven't even made it that far.
No.
Maybe you have. But the Jem'Hadar ships firing up works with the shape of the panels. The energy coming out of the wormhole works with the shape of the panels. Like, it's just a well-designed page with very asymmetric shapes. So eventually, the signal goes away, and there's like a neat effect for the view screens. Like, you think it's a printing error, but it is the view screens facing all sorts of interference. And no one is responding to the station, even though they're fighting all around the outside. And yeah, they're just ignoring the station, trying to shoot stuff. And the station takes a hit. Shields go up. Kira orders Dax to lock phasers on the Jem'Hadar. We got a great close-up of Kira saying, fire. And
poor Quark.
I know. The dude at the Dabo table, he just wants to spend some latinum.
Yeah.
Have a good time. And they totally miss. Like, it's a boof sort of miss. Because of all the energy coming from the wormhole, they have to recalibrate. And then they finally hit one of the Jem'Hadar ships. Except their involvement somehow gets them wrapped up with the energy field. And it's like little tendrils, pink tendrils coming out of the blue and orange wormhole. It's looped around some of the pylons and the docking ring. And Chief O'Brien has many faces, apparently. Like, in one panel, he's like, oh, is he hunky? Should I be attracted to Chief O'Brien? But he's there. He is trying to figure out what's happening, how to keep the station from being sucked into the wormhole. Thrusters are no good. The structural integrity field of the station is too weak for the thrusters. And so they need to evacuate the docking ring and the pylons immediately. And you get three little inset panels, again, funky shapes, that work really well for showing off the damage to the pylon right above one of the torpedo launchers. Like, from the same footage they use like five different times.
Yeah.
And the shape and the detail, so good. But the whole pylon breaks off. Luckily, everyone has survived.
Yes, they got everyone out, but one of the six legs of Deep Space Nine snapped off.
Yeah, I mean, it was an upper pylon, so.
That's still a leg.
Yeah.
There's no up or down in space.
Well, to me there is. The lower ones, I feel like, are prettier.
Oh.
As ridiculous as that may be. So they go through with a lot of damage. Like, systems are barely functional. And the Defiant is like, where did the station go? They're not on sensors at all.
Yeah. Well, and this is where you really call into question, like, can it fit?
Right? How much lube was involved?
Yeah. To slide that space station through to the Gamma Quadrant.
Ugh, wrongs.
Like, it just, I didn't think that it would. Because when it opens up, like, a ship, or a few ships can come through.
And you see the, not the little Jem'Hadar fighter ones, but like the bigger command ships for the Dominion. Like, several of those can fit through the wormhole at once.
So I guess if you stack them up next to DS9.
Yeah.
It would fit.
I suppose.
Yeah. But
I feel like they were very cognizant of, like, they're close enough to use tractor beams and phasers for things coming out of the wormhole, but also not so close to get wrapped up in any energy emissions.
Yeah.
So there they go. And the doctor is just doing his job. He's just very focused on the patients. He doesn't really know what's happening. Because he's like, yeah, when we get back to DS9, back to my infirmary, it'll be great. But Worf calls the captain up and it's gone and the wormhole's open. We get a big ad for Action Man on a non sequitur situation. So there's a damaged Jem'Hadar ship, and that's it. No, no debris. So the station wasn't destroyed.
It's still missing that pylon.
You think there'd be some debris?
Do you think the pylon went through the wormhole with him?
I think so.
I think it did.
Yeah.
How?
Well, the graviton emissions.
Oh. The gravitational field that our bonbons can exhibit.
Oh my goodness. It's so true. Well, maybe not Asha right now. She's like fully on her side asleep.
Yes.
Possibly having bonbon dreams.
Oh, good for her.
Her mouth was twitching so much. Like, you know, she was dreaming about treats. And greens.
Yes.
There's a hierarchy of salad, dear listener. And this might be only relevant for, like, Sarah Century. But, like, the hierarchy of salad options is real. Like, dill, top of the list.
Yeah.
Basil makes Nora salivate. She has to wash her face after she has a whole head of basil.
Yep.
And lemon balm at the end. Store-bought celery is at the bottom, but garden celery is in the middle.
Yes.
I think they mix it up with parsley.
Mm.
But parsley's up there, and then lettuce. Lemon balm on the bottom. I think hyssop is in the middle.
Yeah. Store-bought romaine is always a standby for them.
Yeah.
Like, they'll eat it.
And I think they don't like the old dandelion leaves, which, fair, those get bitter.
Yeah. Back also, to the story.
Also bitter, the Jem'Hadar that is in the brig. He runs into the force field because, of course, and he's like, what is this new Federation weapon that you've used? And so Worf and Sisko are like, he's afraid.
Mm.
Also, we don't have a weapon. So something happened that they don't understand, and that's why they're blaming us. So they had also rescued some of these Amaranth seed species. They're sort of like purple vampires.
Mm.
I mean, without fangs. And he's also like, you're going to invade us. You have this new weapon that you've deployed. It's like, Bish, you were saved by the station. What are you going on about? And there's another officer there who's like, well, I don't actually have anything to add, but I'm going to look shifty, like I do know something. So Sisko,
she is bun-bun dreaming, but not about treats. She's been twitching a lot.
Oh, her feetsies?
She's been hopping in her sleep.
She's doing binkies in her dream, I think so. Fun fact, she will do binkies when I'm downstairs making coffee, so it just sounds like a thunderous roar from up here.
And then she'll be all done.
And then she'll be totally done by the time I come home.
Yep.
She's like, I've earned my treat. Please give it to me. I'm going to loaf now. Also loafing is Kai Winn, and she is doing the ear thing because she's a bitch.
Yeah.
And she's actually being helpful, which is really weird.
Yeah.
This is the most, like...
Nice?
Yes. That I've ever seen her. And there's a prophecy of the apocalypse. It begins with a wound in the heavens. And this one Vedic Twan, also known as Vedic Twat, is all in on hook, line, and sinker. He's got all these followers. And drumming up fear. So there's an observatory that gets in contact with the captain, like, oh yeah, we do know what happened. They got sucked in, dragged right through. And then
the observatory is always trained on the celestial temple / the wormhole.
Yeah.
Because of religion.
Yes.
Like the religious reasons. They always have an eye on where their prophets are.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
The sign that your gods are living right next door. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on it. But the team is looking into the emissions, and good for this Bajoran scientist. I'm a fan. She's got the same sort of short. Like, if she was in the 80s, she'd be in a rock band.
True.
I feel, with that look.
Yeah.
So the computer figured out that the station could go through, but there's so much radiation the Defiant can't get through. We get the iconic line of, "That's not good enough, Mr. Worf. Find me a way through." I don't know what Worf is going to do about the laws of physics.
Yeah.
He can't guilt them like he does, yeah, Alexander.
True. Or Jadzia.
No. So there's a whole riot happening outside the observatory that Vedic Twat is there. And yeah, the scientist is like, "You should get back inside where it's safe." And these dudes just like hop over the fence. And Worf is like, "I'm going to punch this dude in the face and then beam out."
Yeah. Which is very Worf.
Like, yeah, it is, because it's sort of not the best warrior thing. So he gets dressed down a little bit. Like, that retreat might not have been the best. But Worf points out they weren't listening. They were just going to be violent. And we need you up here. So, Sisko gets news that that other Amerlin Seat officer wants to go talk to him. And meanwhile, we get to the station. Chief O'Brien's recording, and we get a Keiko sighting.
Yay!
Keiko and Molly. Keiko coming in clutch with some extra candles stashed away. She knows things are going to go wrong. She has heard all the tea about the station. How O'Brien's holding it together with shoelaces and bubblegum. She's like, "You do the tech stuff. I will be here just in case of candles." And good thing. So Molly is going to bed, and Keiko and Chief have a nice little moment together of like, how bad is it? Are we going to be able to go home? And Chief is like, "I wish I knew." It's very dramatic.
No.
So,
and that's where it ends.
It is. I kept flipping through because there's so many ads.
There are. They packed the end of these comics with ads.
But it's another great art page.
Yeah.
Like the station, some purpley energies, a random errant moon. I feel like there's a name for the a rogue planet. Just hurtling through space with the wormhole acting up in the background. So it adds some emotional weight to the issue.
Yeah. And we should probably put this into the context of the TV series, too. So,
was this while the show was happening?
Oh, yeah.
So it was before the Dominion War broke out?
Yes.
In season 4?
So this is published in the early fall of 1996.
Okay.
So issue 1 came out around the same time as the 3rd season was starting.
Yes. So the
fourth season, 93. It started in 93, right?
Yeah.
94, 95. Fourth season. Because Worf is here. Defiant is here.
And he's wearing red.
Yes. So we also have an ad in the beginning of issue 2 for First Contact. So
the E. I love the E.
And I just want to say these toys sucked. Because they were a 6-inch scale and not a 4.5-inch scale, so they didn't fit with the other Playmate Star Trek toys. Like, if you needed a Worf and you got this Worf, he was a giant.
Oh.
It's like, oh, yeah, you're putting out, like, cool Borgs and things like that, but they're not in scale.
Did the... Like, the one that you have, there's a little bit of articulation, but not a whole lot.
Right.
Was there more in these?
Yes. Actually, no. Like, they had the bicep swivel on the elbow. But that's it. Like, they were just bigger.
Oh.
And I have no clue why Playmates did this. Because they did Generations in the smaller scale. That's how you got Lursa and Bator.
Oh.
From Generations.
Lursa and Bator.
With the boobs.
The boob window.
Is
it to get more detail on the Borg? Like, you need them bigger so you can see all the mechanical bits and tubes?
But they did hue and everything.
Oh.
Like, I want to find who designed. I need to talk to people from Playmates. That'd be a fun episode.
Yeah.
Like, talk about the toys.
talk about the Trek figures.
So anyway, this is the beginning of season four, which means Worf has been freed up because TNG is done. The Next Generation as a TV series, over.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, since this came out, when did he join? The end of season three? Like, wasn't he like appeared and then it was season break, basically?
Yeah, because there's a few episodes in, it was when the war with the Klingons was starting. So
but that like, was the season only way to... three?
No, I think so. It's like towards the end, maybe.
I think so.
So like to deal with the Klingon problem, you need a Klingon.
So for Howard Weinstein to bring Worf in, that's new. Like he had to have gotten some really good notes from Marvel, who got them from Paramount. Like Paramount must have been like, here you go. Here's upcoming the season show Bible sort of thing.
Or like, here's the current status of it.
Yeah.
Where we are at, because even some of the stakes of the Amarylline seat and the Jem'Hadar being like, you're about to invade, you are evil, we're going to fight you.
Yeah.
Like that.
That's current at that time.
Yeah. And it just sort of builds on what's established in the show in a really cool way.
Which is really fun to look back on. And that's why I wanted to contextualize it, that this, it's not like some of the other, so like DC stuff covering the original series, obviously not coming out when the original series is building on it. What we read prior to this with Unlimited happening after TOS and TNG wrapped up.
Oh.
This is coming out at the same time as the TV series is coming out every week.
That's cool. And, oh, so we were in eighth grade when this was happening. Or younger.
96. That's sixth grade. Nope.
Fourth grade.
I don't know.
I remember writing 1992 on my second grade lunch tickets.
Okay.
I guess it was ending when we were in eighth grade. Because I remember like getting to my grandparents' house to watch those final episodes. And I missed one of them and I was very upset because I'm like, there's a lot of plot points.
99?
Oh, seventh grade.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's really exciting for us because this comes out for 15 months. And all 15 months, it's happening alongside the series.
Back when TV seasons were more than just 10 episodes.
Yes, that dropped all at once.
Yes.
All right, so Judgment Day, the conclusion. I also really like, I've read the first six issues of this so far. And so far, the stories are like two issues. Like, setup, conclusion, setup, conclusion. So it's nice and tidy, but not one-shots.
Do you hear Majel Barrett's voice in the background saying, and now the conclusion?
Yes. So we open up on DS9, it's Adrift, and we have O'Brien and other techs, other engineers from the station in the First Contact spacesuit that's pictured in this toy ad.
Oh, yeah, because they're white with a little red accent.
Yes. So, again,
way to keep it pertinent and relevant.
Yeah, like exactly art
coming out.
The artist had good reference as well.
Yeah.
So because First Contact came out that summer as a summer movie.
First Contact was good.
Yes.
I didn't see it in the theater. I think the only Star Trek movie prior to 2009 was Insurrection.
Oh.
That was a fun one for a movie theater.
So they're attempting repairs on the pylon because, you know, when you have a whole pylon where people live and shit just adrift, right, you might want to reattach it.
Like, I can't imagine there's any cargo bays there. Like, is it mostly just lifts?
It has like to be.
Freight elevators and people elevators going to those airlocks?
Yeah. So they just got short range sensors back online. Kira's like managing all this. She's like, I need the updates from everyone. What's going on? And some of the repairs not going as smoothly as one of the consoles does the Star Trek, which is explode.
Of course it does.
Oh,
is this the error page where someone's like, or was it Doctor or was it Bashir to Ops?
I don't know. I didn't catch that.
Oh, somewhere in here, like on the station where Bashir is not. You know, if it's doctor, then it's fine. But if it's Bashir to ops for a medical emergency, then that was an oops.
Oh.
Sort of like how Gregory Wright was like, hey, did you catch the error in the issue I wrote?
Yes. And we're like,
and no.
I'm so glad you defined it. If you want to know the error in the issue that Gregory Wright wrote, which was Daredevil Annual in 1993, check out that episode in the archives. It's a lot of fun.
Do we remember who the new character was for that?
You mean aside from... Oh, no, that was Doctor Strange. No, that... Daredevil. Oh, it was...
It's not the Cadre.
No, it's... I can see his face from the idol. The blood.
Oh, the Devourer.
The Devourer.
Yes.
Devourer. It's the Devourer.
Yes, it is.
If you really want to feel humble, you should record a whole season of a podcast covering new characters, wear a shirt with a bunch of those new characters, thanks Art of Lucas, to a con, and have Jim Starlin himself be like, who are they? And you're like, I don't remember any of them. That's a real humbling feeling when he's like, who's that one? I'm like, well, I can tell you who wrote the issue and I can tell you everything about the issue.
To be fair, we have not finished that season because there's one episode left.
Two. Deathlock, Excalibur.
Oh.
It's the season that hasn't ended yet. How exciting.
A never ending season.
It's like the Royal Rumble entrance that never actually got eliminated. Curtis Axel.
Oh.
We see you.
Yes.
Back to the story. Cisco's on the Defiant with the Amerlin.
Oh, good.
And they're talking about their religion and
cultural background.
Yeah, you love cultural backgrounds.
I do. It's like a whole religious thing. And the founders were like, no, we don't like your religion. You have to stop.
Right.
So
oppression.
They did a whole thing, murdered lots of people. But now there's like an underground movement to bring it back. And one of the tenets of this religion is that there's this force.
Oh, no. Wow, it's Star Warsy.
Well, not the force, but it's like a every so often it'll emerge. It'll burn away the unworthy.
Oh.
So that's sort of what she thinks that this thing was that was pursuing. Like they're trying... The force is going to get burn away the founders.
Mm.
So it was after those ships. So, but the commander of the Amerlin seed ship does not like that.
We're back on Deep Space Nine. Right as Dax is kablammed.
Oh, yeah.
By another console. She's all right, though. Amerlin seed blows in a call and she's like, I see you have a changeling there. Is this the outcast?
Yeah, they're very well informed.
They really are. And she's like, why are you living apart from your species?
I'm going to get some intel.
Yeah.
I'm going to be shifty.
Yes.
And they're like, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about the status of our station and the ships. Like, what aid do you need? Can you render us aid?
Yes.
Question mark.
So Odo goes over to that ship
and they send someone over
who they don't really care about.
They don't. It's the classic like prisoner exchange, but
and they're like, okay, fucking kill him.
Yeah,
go for it.
We have the founder and you can't do anything because if you shoot at our ship you'll kill your friend.
Yes.
So that's not great.
Yep.
And there's such good art. Every time there's the station, like, you know, and just that sliver of a page, that vertical panel,
mm-hmm.
must have taken hours.
Yes.
Oof.
The colors as well. So vibrant.
Yeah.
Like they pop off of the page. And this is where it's somewhat different from DS9. DS9 is muted tones a lot. Like it's earth tony.
It is. The Bajoran uniforms could really use a little.
The station is beige-ish.
And I do appreciate that it's Cardassian architecture and they kept it because it's ugly. And that's how you know it's an alien station.
But here, like the Amerlin species is purple. Their ship is green, like
with those reddish highlights.
Yep.
Like the winged things are orange on them.
So it's a good job at keeping this, the pages popping.
Yes.
Back, we're getting some go-between between Cisco and the station. And they're like, the radiation in the wormhole, like it's almost getting to safe levels again. Like,
almost.
We're almost there where we can navigate this space station back on through.
Yes. But they needed some extra power. So that's what the deal was with the Amerlin seat ship of like, you help us connect your reactor to our reactors and we'll be able to go through all together. And to as a show of good faith, that's why we exchanged people.
Mm-hmm.
Because originally Kira's like, yeah, I'll go. But Odo's like, no, it's fine. They can take me.
Yeah. There's back and forth where this is where we get the Amerlin being like, I'm keeping your changeling.
Yeah.
He's mine, okay? And to work off some aggression, Kira and Dax go in and play some baseball.
I mean, I love a lot of stuff about this issue, but why is a hollow suite operating? Like, Keiko was using a candle.
Poor Keiko. It's almost like the like save the earth by not using straws. And it's like, do you see these corporations and the pollution they're doing? Do you think my straw is going to make a difference? Where it cares, like, you need to conserve energy, so burn these candles. I need to go play baseball.
Thanks, Supreme Court, for getting rid of the good neighbor rule for power plants, because somehow the power companies are like, it's too expensive, but the public health costs are like twice as much as what it would cost those power plants to clean up their act. Anyway.
So we're back on the Defiant, and they can get through. The Defiant can get through.
They try.
They think they can get through.
Attempt one does not go. They have to pull out.
Oh.
There's not enough.
That's a method. Some people don't observe it. We then go to Quark's bar, where we get this little Amerlin visiting the bar. Dabo is back in operation. So, like, they're getting power back. Keiko is still in their quarters with some candles.
You know Quark has some sort of, like, weird system set up that Ra maintains in a squirrel's nest of wires.
Yes.
To make sure that the bar has power when Keiko does not.
Yeah. So this is where Dax is, like, trying to show, look, we can be laid back too.
We're not your enemies.
We're not your enemies.
We're not planning an invasion.
This
is the dude that was abandoned by his people.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows that yet.
No, I don't think they've broken that news. Like, hey, so, buddy.
You're not going back. They don't want you.
Yeah. We're on the Amerlin ship.
And it's a mutiny.
Yes.
Like, there's another member of that religious underground that's there.
Yep.
And they don't care for their commander.
No. They murder her.
They really do.
She is shot through the stomach. And they're like, hey, changeling, time to get out. And, like, they're escorting him to safety while they're killing a bunch of other people.
Oh. I mean, as you do in a mutiny.
Yes. And Odo gets on the screen to call back to Deep Space Nine. He's like, it's okay. I'm safe. We can trust these ones.
Yes. Just a light mutiny.
Yes. And they're about to restore power on the station. Right? Yes? Yeah. No.
They are trying something. Oh, yeah. They're hooking up the engines.
Okay. I got thrown off because he has Kira on a view screen from where they're doing the repairs.
Yeah, the sense of place can be confusing of like, who's on first? Who's on what view screen? Although the use of view screens in a comic, like, good for them.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it would be a lot easier if they just showed the Defiant or, like, showed Kira with the background of the ops. But to do a view screen where it's more dynamic, you get the characters, it's also probably a lot more work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also really cool. Like, it helps develop the sense of place.
Yeah. And this is where there's a group of these Amerlins and
working with O'Brien,
but they tried to sabotage.
Oh.
Some of them sabotage. Power core implosion in 8 minutes. Prepare to abandon ship.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That mutiny was not entirely successful.
Yeah. So this is where the one who was friendly that Dax made friends with is like, I'm not brainwashed. They're just decent people.
Yeah. I love how that's a thing. Like, it's okay. I'm not brainwashed. That's a thing that you have to say sometimes in a Star Trek comic.
The Defiant emerges from this distended anus of a wormhole.
Poor wormhole.
It's been worked over.
A lot go through it in a short amount of time.
Yes. I mean, you have a space station go through you.
See how you feel.
Yeah. But they're like, oh shit, there are two Jem'Hadar ships around Deep Space Nine.
And they're coming, and DS9 doesn't know that they're there.
Intercept course, let's go. And the station then gets its sensors back online, and they're like, the Defiant's coming, and two fresh Jem'Hadar ships.
Yeah, they're fresh.
Yep. And this is where the crew really gets down, like, we need to get some systems online, like, right now.
Right. We have a ship too close that's going to blow up, and it's probably going to take out the whole station when it goes. And we have these ships. What do we do?
This is where the good alien is like, I'm going to send out a distress signal. You all run.
And then they sort of, like, banter about who's going to stay with the exploding ship. But they're using some of the intel that they have, because they're slightly in rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are genuine Dominion communication codes. We'll say that we're in distress.
Yep.
Someone will pilot it over. So then Dax has develops the idea a little bit further. And it's like, hey, we can spare runabout, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that sets up the conclusion.
Yeah. There's a subscription page.
Oh, was that distracting?
Yeah, it is. Yes. So you can get a subscription for $21.97 a year for one title. For two titles, it's $20.97. Three or more, it's $19.97. So the cover price is $1.95. So even if you subscribe to one, you're still saving the price of one comic per year.
I don't think we could have afforded it, but it still would have been fun to... Like, had I known then what I know now, that comics are fun?
Yeah.
That I could have collected X-Men and, like, had issues that were worth money?
Yeah. It's really sad when you think about how poor we were. Like, I remember getting highlights, like, once in a great while. Like, when there was a deal for a subscription to Highlights magazine.
Oh, we had to wait for our dentist appointments, and then they had highlights.
And there was that zoo one.
Oh, we had Ranger Rick.
Okay.
That was fun.
I had, like, a zoo one. Like, I'd have, like, a picture of a giraffe on the cover or something. It's probably something very 90s, like Zootopia.
It might be the same thing, because Ranger Rick was, like, the story in the middle.
Oh.
But and then on the back, it had, like, everyday items that were zoomed in super close. You had to guess what they were.
Yeah.
Good Sister was very good at that.
So, yeah.
She's very smart.
We could have never done this. It was a big deal. They had those fact cards, which we have the Star Trek coasters.
Oh, yeah.
That was a subscription. That was a huge thing for me to get. Like, I never got things in the mail. Now I'm addicted to Amazon.
Oh.
But that subscription, eventually we had to cut it off. It's like, this is too much money.
Also, fun fact, dear listener, speaking of Amazon, if you are thinking about getting an Xbox S, spring for the one with more memory.
Yeah.
Go a step up, because the S doesn't have a whole lot of memory. And then you have to order a new memory card. So I got one, and I got one for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh. Yeah,
thank you for that. Now, how do I install it?
Oh, we can do that easy.
Okay.
But we wouldn't have to worry about it. And all our games could be in the same place had we
invested
for the...
Or the go for the X.
Yes, that's what I mean. Like,
with a drive.
Yeah.
Like, get the disk drive.
You need more memory.
Yeah. Like, the S was great for when we were like, oh, we're just going to play a couple games. But then you buy, like, one game, it takes up 75%.
Yeah. Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Starfield.
and
Crusader Kings,
and that's it.
And then it's like, oh, you want to play Midnight Suns? You need to uninstall something.
Yep.
Anyway,
you can't store it on an external that's hooked up either.
Yeah, it won't take it's the externals. Wild. It has to be a very specific product. Anyway, we need to finish
the conclusion.
It's great. So
the runabout is getting back. It's the Rio Grande.
Of course, it's the Rio Grande. So the distress signal was sent out. They beam off onto the Rio Grande to get back to the station.
The Gemhadar get blown up.
Yeah, the Amerlin's ship, Kablooey.
And then we see that the station has been moved back. It's a very Star Trek ending where, like,
it's so fast.
And then it's like captain's log. We're back. It's like, wow, this is actually written like a DS9 episode where you're like, oh.
The full, yeah.
Like the big exciting explosion and then the resolution.
And you know, it's the whoosh music sound effect and a little bit of trumpet maybe.
They're getting Jemja sticks.
I love that. I love that so much.
They're just gigantic too. The amount of cholesterol in one Jemja stick.
Isn't it sap?
The amount of sugar.
The amount of sugar.
Wow, the callbacks to my physical as a 38-year-old. And they're like, you're slightly high blood sugar. And I'm like, how? Other than genetics. And you have high cholesterol. I'm like, how?
That is genetics.
Both of them are.
Oh, the diabetes part?
Yep. Oh, yeah. There are so many things screwed up in my family's medical history. Like, I am...
Well, that's a thing.
I'm going to be like a cyborg.
You learn about your family, and then you go to fill out the family history on a medical exam. It's and a like,
horror show.
Oh, how far back do you want? Do you want, like, my great-grandparents' cause of death? And what about their siblings?
Yeah.
And, like...
Which, actually, that, like, even with some of my, like, grandparent history, it doesn't matter as much.
Oh.
Like, I have slightly elevated risk for stuff, as you know.
Yeah.
But it's such a small percentage. It's, like, that's so far removed. Like, your grandparents, in terms of that disease risk, is still so far removed from you.
Oh.
Like, we're going to do the preventative stuff, but you really shouldn't.
That makes sense, because there's so much... cultural and society that has changed
and we've seen Crusader Kings and how inheritable traits sometimes do not trickle down.
No, and it's so annoying. I want all my genius traits to go through.
So this is where Sisko and Dax resolve things within like three panels.
They do, and this is not the first time we've seen this in a Star Trek comic.
No,
so maybe it's not specific to the comics, it's just a Star Trek thing.
And they're like, what if that power that they worshipped was intelligent? And the resolution is like, guess we'll never know.
Which I for someone who's the emissary of the prophets who are living in the wormhole slash celestial temple, wouldn't you give a little bit more credence to it?
Yeah,
or like maybe a few throwaway lines to like how the Bajorans are so spiritual and they see the wormhole as a celestial temple, but for Starfleet they're just wormhole aliens living in a wormhole. Like, bring some of that perspective into the consideration of this power that the Amerlins had and used to worship. Now we're getting back to it. And then it woke up and it's just like, I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Like, that, considering the universe that you're in and the location you are.
And who you are.
And who you are and the proximity of the cultures around you. I would have appreciated a few lines about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, overall, excellent issue. I enjoyed it.
So, the preview... So, I looked on Fandom, Memory Alpha.
Oh.
For the info, and it lied to me about the writer.
Really?
Yeah. Because we have a preview right here in the back. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, number 3. A wounded band of Maquis...
Maquis?
Bring a raging virus aboard the Deep Space Nine station by Mariano Nicieza and Tom Grinberg. Mariano, brother of Fabian. Yes. So, wow. Memory Alpha, not correct. When they're like, yeah, he wrote a ton of issues.
Oh.
Howard Weinstein.
Maybe he did 5 onward.
Maybe. Oh, wait. That's the artist. Tom Grinberg was... Okay. Never mind.
Oh, yeah, because there was the whole thing, too long, didn't read. The artist did a lot.
Yes. So anyway, we will have Howard come back.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Because it was good.
He'll be back for 6 and 7.
Excellent. The art, consistently so good, so detailed.
Yeah.
The colors popping off the page.
Oh, maybe I lied about it, these issues. Anyway, 1, 2, 3, 4 are 2 art stories. But apparently, number 6 is a part 1.
Oh.
So there must be a fill-in.
Far out.
Sure. Do you want to know what else was going to be coming out around the same time?
Sure.
We have X-Men Inferno.
The Inferno?
The Inferno. It's collected in a massive trade paperback.
Oh, so it has already happened.
Yep. Professor X and the X-Men, number 15.
I didn't know that was a title.
Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch question their allegiance to the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants for the first time as the Stranger comes to Earth.
That seems like it must be a background story.
I think it's a retelling.
Oh.
Someone from the X world who's listening to this right now, please let us know.
Because we've been following Avenging Hour, and Scarlet Witch is
definitely
very 90s things and very heroic.
Generation X number 23.
Oh.
Banshee has stolen Siren away from Black Tom Cassidy, so Black Tom's going to get his revenge by snagging Generation X away from Banshee.
Oh, Black Tom. I like Black Tom.
And, yeah, that's about it. I mean, you have your Captain Americas, your Ghost Riders.
Oh, that, I mean, that Banshee was also the best Banshee.
It was. So, not a bad start to the DS9 comics.
No, I'm intrigued. I want to learn more. I love how consistent it is with the TV show.
Yes. Very connected, very in-world. I'm liking it so far.
And I suppose we're less likely to get like the fun, quirky bottle episode type issues. Like
you've seen these covers. You know that there's a Lwaxana with a baby coming.
Oh, that's this series?
Yes.
That's not the DC one?
No.
Gordon Purcell?
Yes.
Oh, hooray.
I don't think Gordon was on that issue, though.
Oh, but he has done great things for Lwaxana.
Yes, you have a commission.
She's on my wall now.
Yes. So, don't worry, there will be wacky.
Oh, good.
If you're getting Lwaxana with a baby and Odo looking confused in the background.
I cannot wait. I love her so much. And people are like, she's the worst.
I don't get it.
And like, if you actually pay attention to what she's saying, I mean, sure, she's an overbearing mom.
Yes.
But like her interactions with Alexander, except for the mud bath, are great.
Yeah.
Also, it makes sense for Betazoid culture. Like, you're open. You don't hide anything, like,
yeah,
emotionally or physically.
Yep.
Which goes into her, like, her wedding thing on the Enterprise where she's all naked. And shout out to Demanda Martini for recreating that look.
Yeah.
And in Imzadi by Peter David.
Oh, yeah.
There's a dive into Betazoid culture.
Yeah.
Where, like, it seems to be like a jungle planet. Very lush, very green.
You
very
need to read some of the novels I did. There's the Battle of Betazed novel that I read.
But the context around the wedding that both Riker and Deanna are at, and he's so confused. And I think that's when he first sees her, and then he gets all lusty. And I'm like, I don't know why she put up with him after that, especially when he tries all these intrigue things. And she's like, read the room.
Yeah.
Look at what the planet, you have multiple people telling you, be open and honest, don't hide anything. And he still tries to schmooze. Very silly.
So plenty of that coming up. And I need to get back to Star Trek novels. I'm trying to get through.
Oh, the Brian Sanderson.
Yeah. Brandon Sanderson.
Oh. I'll get it at some point.
Yes. Because book 5 of that series is coming out in December.
Stormlight Saga?
Stormlight Archive. I'm halfway through book 3, and halfway is an achievement. Yeah. That's like 500 pages in. So maybe not even halfway.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then I have book 4, and then I can get back to Star Trek books. All right, everyone. Let us know your thoughts on Deep Space Nine. We want to hear them.
Yes. Did you love it?
We hope you did. A lot. Yes.
Those are the only two options.
And we will catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.